You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The waiting list for elective surgeries has skyrocketed in the last year, with many experts pointing towards ongoing workforce shortages as the cause. Thousands of people on the waiting list are in intense, ongoing pain, requiring essential operations such as hip or knee replacements. For my weekly catch-up with the National Party's Dr. Shane Reddy, we discuss the causes of the growing waiting list and the National Party's proposed solutions to the problem. I began by asking him what he saw to be the current issue with wait times for elective surgeries and what he believes to be its cause.
So what we now know is that the surgical waiting list, that is those people on a public health waiting list, waiting more than 4 months, has doubled in the last 10 months alone. That is, it's gone from about 14,000 in July last year to the latest data, which is April, 28,000. It's 14,000 people in 10 months, a doubling in 10 months. And these are people with hips and knees, people who aren't sleeping at night because of the pain. They're people with cataract operations who are slowly going blind. These are the people who have already waited more than 4 months and are likely to wait more. Now, there's a number of reasons as to why this is the case. First of all, I don't accept, and we shouldn't accept, that COVID is responsible for everything. It's too convenient an excuse to just blame COVID, particularly in this instance. In fact, in most of the waiting lists, if we look at the data, even before COVID arrived in early 2020, the waiting lists were doubling and tripling. And so we have government incompetence from when we handed over in 2017 to early 2020, the waiting lists were already doubling and tripling, firstly. Secondly, in 2020, when COVID did arrive, there was an influence, but that influence could have been reduced if Andrew Little had built more ICU beds. Because as you recall, a key reason for going into lockdown and all the measures that we undertook was to quote-unquote protect the health system. That was around protecting ICU beds. So elective surgery, specialist appointments, outpatient appointments were all cancelled to protect ICU beds. Well, you know, if we'd built more ICU beds, we may not have needed such a severe response. From 2021 to 2022, Andrew Little was warned by 100 DHBs that unless we improve the immigration settings, we will get an increase in waiting lists, we will get increasing wait times, and we will have a health crisis. He was warned a year ago, despite what he says that he's only just found out. He was warned a year ago, and he completely ignored that warning. And that brings us now to the fourth point through here today, which is health reforms. All the attention and money from this government has been focused on the health reforms, which, as we're looking at it, is more money, more bureaucracy, and worse outcomes. So across four things, that's how we come to be where we are today, with a waiting list, surgical waiting list, that has doubled in the last 10 months.
How could more money be spent, or even less money be spent, to get better outcomes? If more money is being spent and more bureaucracy is leading to worse, what could be changed to make these outcomes better?
Oh, it's really simple. First of all, you could have targets. One of the first things this government did was to remove targets. If you don't have a target, you don't know where the ship's going. The ship can wander anywhere it likes, and you don't have accountability. In fact, at the end of last year, Andrew Little removed the health targets. So they decided health targets weren't useful in 2018. I think that was a mistake. And then 2020, Andrew Little removed the health targets and instead created some health indicators. That was a terrible example of shifting the goalposts, because if you look at first specialist assessment, for example, those people who are waiting to see a specialist and outpatients, in December, the day before the health targets were cancelled, I think there was about 30,000 on the waiting list. It was a bad figure anyway. The next day, when the health indicators are announced, suddenly that measure is plus, I think it was 0.3%. How can it go from 30,000 people waiting to plus 3%? Oh, you've decided to say the measure is, have they delivered the number of surgeries against what they said they would? Well, you know, if you lower the bar and just say you're going to do one surgery, you will meet that indicator every single year. And so there's a number of reasons why they've put more money, added more bureaucracy, and are getting worse outcomes, and certainly removing health targets and then shifting the goalposts is one of them.
How do you believe it would be possible in 2020, during the onset of COVID, or at the time of the onset of COVID, you know, one of the biggest health crises, not just in New Zealand, but across the world, to not shift the goalposts? Do you believe it would be possible to keep the exact same goals and motivations and targets for a system that is now undergoing such a huge pandemic?
Yes, absolutely. So you maintain the target. So, for example, the target may be that to see a specialist within 4 months, or, for example, ED waiting times, 95% seen within 6 hours. You maintain the target, but you may reduce the threshold. You might say, look, in this next 3 months, we'll accept 90% as the threshold, but maintain the target that's been there for the last 10 to 15 years so that you still have accountability, you're still assessing yourself, but you can adjust some of the thresholds around that target. Don't get rid of the target completely.
What would a national plan to decrease surgery wait times look like, and what would it involve?
So we really need to focus on health workforce, and if we're privileged to be government in 2023, you'll see that as a high priority for us. And what we'd need to do, and in fact the government could do it here today, first of all, Andrew Little needs to acknowledge that there is a health crisis, and it just gets a bigger and bigger hole that he's digging, and the more out of touch he looks, the more he refuses to do that. So he does that, and then what he should be looking at today is, with a stroke of his pen, he can change the immigration policy, so that nurses, for example, international nurses, don't have to wait for 2 years to progress on the residency pathway, like doctors, like multimedia DJs. They can start on day one. That would be an immediate addressing, because all pathways tend to head back to workforce shortages. You can have the best policies in the world, but if you don't have the workforce to deploy them, it doesn't matter. So it's just something he could do today, something that we would do today. Secondly, we have doctors and nurses driving Uber Eats. They've passed their medical council exams, but they can't get an intern position. We must be able to figure out a place for this critical resource. And then thirdly, in the medium to long term, we need to turn on our own domestic pipeline so we grow our own homegrown, culturally competent doctors, nurses, and allied health professionals. And the despair that the sector has there is that in the health budget 3 months ago, there was not one further dollar for one further medical school place next year, which means we won't be increasing the medical intake in 2023. The soonest it might be is 2024, and that's a tragedy of short-sightedness.
To what extent do you believe that a health workforce to alleviate surgery wait times coming into entering into the New Zealand workforce must come from other countries around the world rather than domestic training?
So it takes 5 years or 3 years to graduate, 5 years to have a fully qualified nurse. If we turn that tap on now, which is why I've called it a long-term plan, we're not going to do anything tomorrow, the day after, or next year. Doctors are even more, 7 years for your basic training, another 3 after that. We've always relied on international medical graduates. 40% of our doctor workforce, about 45% actually, are international medical graduates. We will need to continue to compete for international medical graduates for many years still to come until we can turn on our own domestic pipeline. That raises the question as to whether we're an attractive environment, because remember, we're competing with Australia, we're competing with Canada, and certainly all the signals are that we're not an attractive environment. I mean, we've got nurses under a pay freeze still. Their care capacity demand management model, which says so many patients per nurse, hasn't been fully deployed. And you've got Australia saying they're going to build a $4.5 billion health army. We're not an attractive international environment at the moment.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.